Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Can you imagine? No fare buses in Columbus. Central Ohio real estate developer Bob Weiler has been thinking about this idea for a long time. And if that happened, Columbus would be among the very few major metro areas with no fare public transit. We're talking about the prospect and possibility of such a proposal today. Coming up, we'll hear from a Central Ohio Transit Authority official, and we'll also hear from an Ohio State professor who studies sustainable transportation. Joining us now is Central Ohio real estate developer and former COTA board member Robert Weiler. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann. Happy to be here.
You've thought about this for a long time, even before you became a member of the board back in the early 2000s.
I have been. I've been thinking about this and hoping that we could make COTA available for everybody and make it free.
Why does that make sense to you?
Well, I think we have to start off with something we all agree on, and that is traffic congestion is reaching the breaking point. We're getting to the place where, unfortunately, we're going to approach Atlanta and some of these other cities where you just can't move around. So from that standpoint, we have to do something. And I think the best way of getting more riders is to make it free. And I have yet to meet anybody who doesn't like the word free. That's the number one word in marketing, you know, buy one, get one free, or free trial for 15 days. I'm confident that if we were to make it free, that we would have more riders. And so that's why I am for it.
But, of course, nothing's free. I mean, it would have to be paid for. Fares make up about 12% of the operational costs for the Transit Authority for COTA. We'd make that up, you're proposing, in a sales tax increase.
Correct. You're absolutely right. There's no free lunch. I think it was Harry Truman who said that.
Right.
I don't know. But you're right. Somebody's going to have to pay it. But I think we have to ask ourselves, should public transportation be a right or should it be a privilege? Should you be a wealthy person? Should it be an elite situation? And we as a society and as a country decide certain things should be available to everybody. Now, that doesn't mean we don't have a means of paying for it, and we do. And I want to talk about the tax. But again, we look at our public schools. We look at our parks. We look at the library. We have one of the best library systems in the country. Thank you, Pat Leszczynski. But we've decided libraries should be free. And I was looking at your new beautiful building, the WOSU building. We're not going to charge to have people come there. And I don't think we should charge for public education either any more than we would charge for our government buildings or our walkways. And so the question then becomes, there's no free lunch. Who's going to pay for it?
What is in it for people who don't use public transportation?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because I think one of the criticisms has been, well, only 5% ride the bus. The other 95%, there's no benefit. And I would take the position those other 95% are the ones that are really going to benefit, because those 95% are driving their cars. They need their cars. And I can appreciate that. I need my car to go from place to place. But if you can get more people out of their cars and into buses, those people are the ones who are going to benefit, because the congestion they're in is going to be a lot less. So just take, hypothetically, 40 people, which is what our standard bus holds. And you take 40 cars, and it seems as I drive downtown, my survey shows that about everybody has no passengers, and I'm guilty too. And so you take those cars off the road because they're now on COTA buses. The people who are saying, well, I don't get a benefit. No, you're getting a huge benefit, because now you don't have the congestion. That's the whole reason we're trying to make it free and get those people to take the bus.
Be like a national holiday every day.
Yeah, it would be for those who now, unfortunately, are using so much of their dollars to pay for the bus.
Is riding a bus really that expensive, though?
You know, Ann, it's not that expensive for me. I'm in the fortunate position of not having to worry about the $2. But it's a lot of money. I mean, let's just take take above minimum wage. Say you're making $12 an hour. To get to work, you're now paying $2 to get on the bus, $2 to get home. It's costing you $4.
That's assuming there's no transfers and anything else.
Yeah, correct. And so that's a lot of money. So it's like a raise for people who are now at the position in their life where it is a struggle to come up with those $2.
Listeners, what do you think? Are you willing to pay a tax increase, a sales tax increase in the Central Ohio area, Franklin County, in exchange for free COTA for all? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest is Robert Weiler. He is a prominent Central Ohio real estate developer and a former member for about 12 years of the COTA board. If you have a question or comment for him, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So let's talk about that sales tax you're proposing to generate enough revenue to forego fares.
Yeah, and let me just say, this is not just my idea. There are a lot of us who've been working on this. In fact, we were working on the idea, well, let's make it a private-public partnership to fund it. It is about $20 million a year. That's the shortfall. And so let's try to get $10 million from the city and the county. And by the way, a 400-car garage, should the city build them, and they've been building them, cost $10 million right there. So maybe the city would put in $5 million, the county would match it with $5 million, and then we'd get the private industry to come up with it. We've been working on that for a couple of years. And when I spoke with somebody who's very prominent here in town, a name you'd recognize, and I said, here's what we're doing, and they say, well, the fellow said, well, Bob, if the sales tax is now at 80, it was, this is a year ago, it was around 84-85%, but now it's 87%. What would it take to make the sales tax so that it would cover the whole thing? And so I checked with the Franklin County Auditor's Office, a 0.1%, that's a penny, Ann, for a $10 purchase, one penny for a $10 purchase, would raise $23.5 million.
A year.
A year, correct. And so when people, and the other thing, there's been another complaint, and I was listening to your earlier segment about the sales tax being regressive. Well, it's not, first of all, it's not as regressive as we think from the standpoint that food is not taxed, groceries not taxed, medical items are not taxed. So the low-income households don't have a lot of discretionary income that gets taxed. So I'm not sure that it's as taxed as much as we think. But the more important thing is all of this revenue will be going to COTA. And who does COTA serve? Disproportionately middle and lower income families. So it's just the opposite of being regressive. Just the opposite.
The idea is free COTA up from fares, bring more riders in.
Correct.
The way my mind works is then you're talking about more buses eventually, more upkeep, more. $23 million a year isn't what is going to make a sustainable bus operation in a city, particularly growing the size of Columbus.
You're absolutely right. At least I hope you're right, because I'm hoping and I feel optimistic that we're going to need a lot more buses. And the evidence we have is the C bus downtown. It's free, as you know. Mm-hmm. It's been a miraculous success. The expectations have been greatly exceeded. Again, people love the idea of being able to hop on a bus free. So what are we going to do when we need more buses? Well, I mentioned about the city and the county and the private industry. Maybe they would help. But also, I'm hoping that there'll be more sales tax because people will have more dollars to spend. And here's another important point, I think. Columbus will be the first major city to have free public transit. Won't that be attractive for people coming here, visitors, conventions? This last week, we just finished with the Arnold.
Right.
51 million. And most all of that is sales tax. That's hotels and restaurants and such. Had this been in place, COTA would have gotten $51,000, which is a pretty good down payment on a bus, which costs about $250,000. And so I think you're going to see a lot more sales tax. But to the extent that it is popular, we'll find ways, and I'm certain that we can then go to the city and say, hey, doesn't this justify the savings you're having by not building more parking garages?
Let's see. Harry in Hilliard, you're on the air. Hi, Harry.
Hi, Anna. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you.
Yes, ma'am. My biggest question is that I don't mind like paying a percentage increase on the sales tax, but people that I know, the challenges that they face is many of them cannot get to the actual Coda bus station, especially in winter. So my opinion is like I'm willing to pay the sales tax increase, but we need to make sure that every penny and every dollar goes towards that purpose.
Okay, and I think Kerry makes a really good point. One of the biggest problems is just getting to a bus stop. A lot of people, they're disabled. They live too far away from a bus stop. What about that? There's a lot more to busing than the wheels on the bus.
Yeah, the wheels on the bus go
round and round. I know. I didn't mean that.
You're absolutely right. And Harry, you're right. Unfortunately, the buses can't go everywhere, but they do go throughout the neighborhoods. Now, we do have, for those who are disabled, we have separate service for them for pickup. But, you know, people talk about the first mile, last mile.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to make arrangements for that. And I'm not suggesting this is the panacea, but certainly for those who are now walking a block or two from parking garages, aren't they going to walk a block or two and get on a free Coda bus? I think that is going to be replacing a lot of this overcrowded parking that we have in so many places.
Daniel in German Village, you're on the air. Hi, Daniel.
Hi, Ann, Mr. Weiler. How are you guys doing?
Good.
So I'm fortunate enough that I live close enough to the C bus and have started to commute to and from the Short North because I work in the Short North. But we're actually losing a lot of people in the service industry in the Short North, because they don't have access to park because that's so expensive, and that there's not enough bus access out in the suburbs for them to come down from the Short North where the money-making opportunities are. Does this plan kind of have any contingent to expand the bus service? I think your previous caller just kind of touched on it a little bit.
A little bit. They were more like about just that last mile kind of a thing. But Robert Weiler, what about that expanding beyond and getting people to jobs where they need to go?
Well, that's the important thing, is getting to jobs. And as far as the expansion, your next guest, I'm sure, can talk to you about what are the future plans for Coda. But I would say the fact that we have the C bus taking people to the Short North who are already downtown, many of them are on the south side of downtown, has helped immensely as far as the parking. And the people who live in the Short North, I have a lot of sympathy for them. They didn't ask for all this additional parking bans and not being able to park in front of their house and building more parking garages. I don't think it's the answer. So to the extent that we can take the C bus or a bus, and here's the nice thing, when it's free, we don't have to worry about waiting for the C bus. I've got people who wait for the C. Listen to this, Ann. People who can certainly afford the $2. I know that.
But people love to get a free deal.
Yeah, but they'll let buses go by them until they get to the C bus. And that's why when people say, are you sure you're going to have increased ridership? People love free. They will walk a block or two to get a free bus. I'm quite sure.
You said you're not alone. Who's with you on this?
Well, I've got people from really all walks of life. I've got some business people who've been with me, some executives. I've got people who are working in nonprofits who...
Can you name names?
No, I'm not going to name any names. They'd kill me. But but I hope maybe you'll hear from them.
When you're kind of rolling this out incrementally, is there a point where you want to start a campaign?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because a lot of people have... I've gotten a ton of emails. Thank you very much, WOSU. Friday on the record. And I don't know how everybody got my email address, but all those who email me, thank you so much. I thank the the teacher in the Columbus schools, vocational teacher who's concerned about his kids getting to work. And I just got a ton of them. And up till now, knock on wood, they've all been very positive, people like Free. But anyway, what's your question again?
Well, when do you start a campaign on this?
Okay. I knew there was my age has caught up with me here, Ann. At the end of almost every email, they say, what can I do to help? And in fact, I have a couple people who are community organizers. Can I help organize? Well, it'd be much easier and simpler and quicker just to have the county commissioners take a vote. All it would take is two people, and it's a lot easier to get two people than to get a cast of thousands, which it would take if we went that route.
But Franklin County Board Kevin Boyce from the Board of Commissioners has said that he doesn't think raising the sales tax is a good idea.
Well, I think what I heard him say also is he thinks a free COTA is a good idea. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's just a question of how do we get there? And Kevin's a very close family friend. He's a very smart guy, former state treasurer. So I have confidence that when Commissioner Boyce starts thinking about the fact that the beneficiaries of the free bus are the people he wants to help the most. And so do I, and I think so do most of us in Columbus. They're the ones who the $2 is really important to. All the dollars are going back to COTA. They're going to the middle and lower income families.
It looks like Dwight Smith from New Albany, you're on the air. You support this. Hi, Dwight Smith.
Yes, I do. As a matter of fact, I was listening, and you asked Bob would he name names, and I was listening. And I'm one of those folks.
Okay.
I was going to send in the question, but he answered it before I got through, which is I think one of the important things is the ability to connect people with jobs. There's a real economic benefit there. I agree with cutting back on the carbon footprint, et cetera, in Central Ohio, but this is something that I've talked with and listened to Bob talk about for quite some time. It is a tremendous opportunity for Central Ohio and for Columbus to do something that is very special and amazing. So I just wanted to call in and share that comment. Unfortunately, the question I had got answered before I got
okay.
there. But I'm glad to be listening in today. Great show. This is an important topic.
Thank you, Dwight Smith of New Albany. Robert Weiler, I have to say goodbye to you. I appreciate you coming on so much.
Thanks, Lois. Can I just end with one thing?
Sure.
Our new tagline, I'd like to have it be text and ride, because, as you know, we're now internet accessible on all our buses. So can we text and ride and not worry about driving and texting?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Thanks so much, Ann, for having me.
Robert Weiler, Central Ohio real estate developer, former longtime COTA board member, and is making a proposal for free fare, no fare, bus rides in Central Ohio, asking taxpayers to pony up their sales tax or maybe a couple other ways. We'll be considering this proposal for the rest of the hour. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at AllSides@WOSU.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We are talking about public transit today and an idea put forth by former COTA board member and longtime real estate developer Robert Weiler to make buses in Central Ohio no fare, spreading the burden instead with a countywide sales tax or another source of revenue. Coming up, we'll hear from the director of transit in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. That's the closest place we could find to Columbus where public transit is fare free. Ohio State Geography Professor Harvey Miller studies sustainable transportation. He joins us now. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Ann.
And Patrick Harris, Director of Government Affairs and Special Projects at Central Ohio Transit Authority, he joins us as well. Welcome back.
Thanks, Ann.
So, Patrick Harris, this is not on the COTA agenda. It's not a COTA proposal. How is COTA leadership responding?
Well, first of all, I mean, kudos to Bob. He's a legend at COTA, legend in the community, so we appreciate any idea that he brings forth. The leadership at COTA really is focusing on the future, and that future means trying to secure capital investment and expansion. This novel idea of free COTA bus fares and the possible tax increase to pay for it, that looks at the system now. We're looking at the future. We have dozens and dozens of businesses reaching out to COTA regularly saying we need service at our front door. Our ridership is up 3%, though we still have plenty of room on buses. And I agree with Bob that, you know, that traffic congestion is becoming a problem here. And all I can say is COTA is there to meet the demand right now. But the idea of free bus passes is not something that's on our agenda. It's not what the board is looking at. It's not what our leadership team is looking at.
But so it's not on the agenda now, but are you actively going to oppose this?
Well, I don't know what there is to oppose because
there isn't really anything
on the table. It's a discussion that the community's having. We'll put it at that and leave it at that for now. Again, our focus right now is looking at the demand that we have from businesses, from riders, and really we are looking at how to receive more funds. And COTA's focusing and working right now at the State House to try to get the state to increase investment in transit.
Right, by way of the gas tax, but...
Well, actually, not the gas tax. Believe it or not, transit cannot, constitutionally, is not able to receive any dollars from the gas tax.
Yeah, some people say that's a debatable question. But, yeah. All right, so, Harvey Miller, what do we know about what fare-free public transit, you know, what it could do?
Yeah, you know, there's very few citywide experiments in the world. Most fare-free transit zones. Well, we have fare-free transit, of course, in Columbus. We
C-bus,
have C-Bus, yep. C-Pass, you know, we can count that. Also the campus area bus service. So we know it works, at least in limited circumstances. City-wise, it's a bit more complicated. I'm in favor of fare-free in principle because I do believe that mobility and accessibility is a human right. So I agree with Bob on that. But if we want to get people out of cars, it's not that easy. Fare-free transit is a good idea for social equity purposes. There's no question about that because transportation is expensive in our society. If we want to get people out of cars, we really should be talking about improving the quality of service, you know, making it more frequent, more reliable, and quicker. The experience around the world is that fare-free does not really cause a big shift of people out of cars unless we do other things to help support public transit.
Such as
increasing the service, mm-hmm. increasing the quality of service.
24/7 kind of a thing.
Maybe not 24/7, but at least for a large part of the day having frequent service, you know, and quick service. So that's something we have to do. We also have to lower our subsidies for driving. And that's a big thing is that there's a really unequal playing field between driving and public transit in the state of Ohio and in many places in the United States.
What do you mean lower subsidies for driving?
Well, right now, driving is heavily subsidized. It's subsidized through low fuel taxes, or I like to say fuel usage fee. It's also subsidized through cheap and free parking. And also by how much space we devote to cars in our street space. And we could do things like we could create dedicated bus lanes that would make bus service much more smoother, much more reliable, fewer delays because buses aren't sitting in traffic. And also much more enjoyable experience, much more like a light rail experience with dedicated bus
lanes. Something cooler like Mike Coleman suggested some years ago when he was mayor of Columbus, mm-hmm. making it cooler. So, Patrick Harris, you know, I've read about that making it free is one thing, but making it fun, making it convenient, making it better is a whole nother thing.
It is, and that's a direction that we're heading as well. And a lot of that has to do on the technology side of things. So I appreciate Harvey bringing up C-Pass, which is a great example of public-private partnership when it comes to transit. 40,000 people available now downtown for a free COTA bus pass, and we've seen increased usage of COTA because
how many people have taken advantage of that?
It's last I looked, the statistics were for the first 6 months, over 500,000 rides were given. That's not riders, but rides were given in that time. And the increase we've seen on our service from the suburbs on the express lines makes us think that there are people who are willing to change their mindset about transportation. But we talk about making it cool. I'll paint a little picture of what's to come in the not too distant future, and that's our multimodal trip planning and common payment system. So the people who right now are used to walking out of their house, brushing the snow off their car, getting in their car, sitting on traffic on I-71, mindlessly, mind-numbing, sitting there on 71 or 315, wherever you might be, the future is these multiple modes. So you could walk out, be picked up by an Uber, taken directly to a COTA bus, get off the COTA bus, take a scooter, and get to your final destination, seamlessly transitioning between multiple modes in one payment. That'll happen here within a year in the city of Columbus through
one payment.
One payment, a common payment system, a common platform where one payment, you use all those different modes. So it's coming, and it's coming rapidly, and that's really the direction that COTA is heading.
Mike in Blacklick, you're on the air on All Sides with Ian Fisher. Hi, Mike.
Hi there. Yeah, I was calling to support the idea. And just to start, I would say that the multi-mode initiative, I think, is great. But I don't think that it has to be done separately or exclusively apart from this initiative of making COTA a free ride. I think that there's a lot of great reasons for the Columbus region to implement free rides through COTA, one of which is getting low and middle income people to jobs. A lot of jobs are in the suburban areas now, and it's very difficult for those folks to get to those places reliably. And also, that type of initiative will have a real stabilizing effect for low and middle income people. A lot of low and middle income people are one challenge away from not being able to get to their job on a particular day, or not being able to get to a doctor's appointment, that type of thing. And taking transportation out of the equation as another stressor for them, I think, would significantly help the Columbus region be a strong region going forward.
Harvey Miller, what about that? I mean, the combination of lowering the rates or eliminating fares and multimodal?
Well, there's really two objectives we could be addressing here. One is the social equity objective, and the other is getting people out of cars, reducing traffic. And
the carbon footprint kind of a thing, yeah.
No, I mean, also this, what Bob was talking about earlier about the fact we're becoming paralyzed with traffic. So there's really two things going on here, two objectives, social equity and reducing traffic. From a social equity point of view, there's no question. And we could, I suppose, provide a fare-free transit for lower-income people. There's no reason why we couldn't do that. But we want to get people out of cars. We really have to improve service. And I can show you that there's this proof exists right now that people are willing to pay more for fast, free public transit, and that's Uber and Lyft. People pay a lot more for Uber and Lyft than they do pay for COTA fares, but they're willing to pay that because it's convenient and quick. If we can up the service for COTA, as Patrick was saying, then that would become more competitive and we get people out of their cars. But just making it free will help lower-income people but won't get large shifts of people out of their cars.
Yeah, Patrick.
You know, in response to Mike, and I really appreciate his call, and $62 is how much a bus pass is for a 31-day bus pass. So you're looking at roughly $2 a day. COTA is the most affordable mobility option in the city. And I think that we do a great job in providing accessibility to jobs, to higher education, to healthcare for the lower income community. So that's what we're here for. And I think that COTA does a great job to do that now.
Mike, thanks a lot for that call. Paul, you're in the North Campus area. Hi, Paul. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, thank you. In support of Mr. Weiler's proposal for free COTA bus fares, I would like to point out that Ohio State already has that option.
Right.
If you get on a COTA bus and you're an Ohio State student with an Ohio State ID, you just swipe the card and your fare is paid. And I believe that the student services fee includes that free bus fare. So there already is free COTA bus service. Thank you very much.
You bet, Paul.
Bye.
Patrick Harris?
Yeah, so another great point by Paul. So it's a great example of the different pass options that COTA puts forth for different groups, right? So you have CPAS, you have OSU, we work with other colleges, universities. And that kind of brings a little bit back to where the direction where COTA is heading. Our board, our leadership is saying, let's get more engaged in the corporate community and create more PASS programs. So there's a private-public partnership here to create more opportunities for access, free access, lower cost access to public transit. So while the concept of a taxpayer beholden tax increase in the sales tax to pay for free COTA is not a concept we're looking at. We are talking to different stakeholder groups in the communities, like different businesses, to try to see if we can work in commuter benefits as part of their employee benefits.
Have you talked with people about what the equation is when it comes to attracting conventions here, when it comes to attracting events to Columbus, if it were to be free?
Well, we do have a shuttle that goes from the airport to downtown for a lot of the convention attendees who take advantage of the Air Connect, not free, but very low cost alternative. We haven't had that discussion specifically with the Convention and Visitors Bureau of mm-hmm. what a free transit system would look like, if that would be more attractive. That's actually a great conversation to possibly have down the road, as I believe National Association of Executives is coming to town, and COTA is very involved with helping to direct them towards Air Connect and CBUS to be able to use our public transit resources.
Yeah. Harvey Miller, I mean, you know, the kind of impact it has on a community when it comes to attracting events.
Sure. I mean, and that's one of the reasons why CBUS exists. It's an economic development tool.
And why it's endured.
That's why it's endured. And that's why a lot of cities have done these circulator buses. So over the longer run, it could have beneficial impacts. For example, if we provide a larger free fare zones or fare-free zones, we could have people moving to take advantage of that. You know, and that could increase business revenues and households living in the city center, which could make up for lost fare. There's no question about that. It also would be a great green signal to send to the community and to visitors that we have a commitment to sustainability here in Columbus and sustainable mobility. So there are benefits from this. There's no doubt about it in terms of economic development and marketing. Again, the concern would be that service does not deteriorate if we move towards offering fare-free, which is really the big thing we really need to do, is we need to improve service, not have it deteriorate.
Hmm. Well, we are going to continue our conversation. Patrick Harris, Director of Government Affairs and Special Projects at the Central Ohio Transit Authority. Thanks for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Ann. Appreciate it.
Harvey Miller, OSU Geography Professor. He studies sustainable transportation. He's going to stay with us, and we're going to hear from another city where they do have free transit. It's not the size of Columbus, but it's a start. We'll get back to that when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Real estate developer and former COTA board member Robert Weiler has proposed no fare buses instead spreading the burden with an increase in the county sales tax or some other way. Still with us is OSU geography professor Harvey Miller. He studies sustainable transportation. Brian Litchfield is transit director in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, where the public transit system went fare-free 17 years ago. He joins us by phone. Welcome to the show, Brian Litchfield.
Thank you for having me today.
What was the argument that Chapel Hill Transit System made 17 years ago in order to go free?
Well, a little before my time. But
I know.
I've been here for 12 years now, so I can tell you what I know.
Wow.
So the system is a partnership, which is a key to our success between the town of Chapel Hill, the town of Carrboro, and the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. The two towns by themselves have a population of around, say, 60,000. And the university, between the university and hospital, you've probably got 25,000 undergrads and probably 20,000 folks working at the hospital. So the university is a huge part of our partnership and system. And when we evaluated our ridership, we evaluated our the amount of money that we were getting off of pass sales and those sort of things, cash revenue at the time, we found that the number was really small. It was less than, for us about the time, about 12%. We said, hey, is there a way that we could cover that cost and find ways to increase ridership and get more folks riding the bus? And one of the things that we determined was fare free would be an opportunity to do so, and went forward and made that happen, utilizing investments from all three partners to make that work.
Okay, so you didn't have to increase taxes anywhere else.
Well, in order to make it work at the time, the student government decided needed to implement a transportation fee to cover the increased cost. And by increased cost would be covering the difference between what they were paying for the passes and what we were paying, what they were paying at the fare box. So the student government said, we think that this makes sense and we want to make this work. So the students chose to implement an increase in the transportation fee. And then the towns picked up the difference as well, too. And over time, while at that point, we didn't have to necessarily increase, property tax or other revenues to cover those costs. Over the 17 years, we've certainly had to make adjustments in order to meet increases in ridership and other things like that as well, too.
How did it change the transit system there? How is it different? Except for the free fare, did it expand it? What changed?
Sure, and that's a good question. What I always remind folks when we talk about fare-free system is it's not just going fare-free that makes the that made our system work. And again, so it's not, you can't just look at Chapel Hill and say, oh, hey, if we do what they did, our ridership is going to increase by 130%, and everyone's going to ride the bus. It likely won't work that way. When we implemented the fare-free system, we also implemented improvements to the transit system that said, okay, we know more folks will ride, so we had to invest in improving frequency. And in fact, there's some of our park and rides that even at that point and through this day have 5-minute to 10-minute peak hour frequencies. We've got core routes that operate within the community that are operating at 10-minute or better service. So we invested in that. We also, as the partnership said, hey, we need to take a look at how we're supporting the system as well, too, and make sure that our parking policies and other things like that line up with our interest in people riding the bus. So the university passed parking requirements that said, hey, unless you're more than a sophomore or higher, you're not going to be able to park on campus. If you work in places like hospital clinics and other places like that, if you want to park on campus, that's good. We've got places for you, but it's going to cost you in order to do that. But if you want to park in one of our parking rides, it's either going to cost and ride the bus in, it's going to be a lot less to park there, or in some cases, maybe even free. So there are other adjustments that come along with that. It's not just, again, a matter of being fare free. That's just a couple examples of things that we did to help support the system as well.
You know, Harvey Miller, our whole culture, really, I mean, American culture revolves around, as one writer put it, automobility in this country. Everything is car first and everything is secondary. It's not that way in Europe. They got fell in love with the cars too, but they did it differently. What happened?
Well, you know, American car culture is really not that old. It's really only since the end of World War II when
right.
we became a car country. I mean, American culture, you could argue, is 400 years old. So to say American culture is car culture, I think, is a little bit – I mean, you hear that a lot, but it's just simply not true. It's something that we made in the second half
it's
of the
choices
second century.
We made.
Choices we made not just as drivers but government made in terms of investing in highways, in terms of mortgage guarantees, in terms of zoning. So we basically created – this car-dependent society we live in. And there's no reason why we can't switch it back. It's going to take a while. It took us 50 years to build the interstate highway system. So it's not going to happen overnight, but it's something we really have to start moving towards.
Well, it's something I read. It said that Europe is much older, obviously, and it was built long before, cars were a twinkle in anybody's eye. It was much more compact to begin with, and we're just much more sprawling.
In places, but not every place. I mean, Columbus has a dense core, for example, that could be well served by public transit as well as walking and bikeability, you know, bike infrastructure. The big difference between us and Europe is that when they were, after World War II, when they were rebuilding their cities, they chose, well, first of all, it was a battle. Like places like Amsterdam, that bike culture that's there was something that was fought by activists. They were trying to make Amsterdam a car-centric city as well in the 60s and 70s, and people
They failed miserably.
Copenhagen, there's wonderful bike lanes in Copenhagen that are the size of an entire street lane, and that's because they ripped up the trolley system after World War II, and people, the citizens there, stood against filling the city with cars, so they converted those trolley lines where the trolley lines were to bike paths. So it's not something that happened automatically here and didn't happen automatically in Europe. We made choices, and these are choices that were made by government and by developers and by a lot of people in the fossil fuel industry and the car industry.
Brian Litchfield, is there any sense down in Chapel Hill about how it's changed the trajectory of the city by making it fare-free and improving the services?
Well, and I think it's important to note that we view the transit system as part of our multimodal system. So, and as you were just hearing, is we've made choices to invest in the system in areas where, as far as service, where it makes sense and where development patterns support it and or can be encouraged. So, and the rest of the community or many other areas of the community are served well by you know, other options, but transit is not something that is necessarily going to work in every neighborhood and every part of our community as a result of that. What we have seen is, you know, interest in being able to support development and multifamily housing and other things in denser corridors and had pretty good success with that sort of with that type of development following or being implemented in corridors where there's high level of transit service. Really good service in those corridors between that downtown and campus. We've seen that. We've seen that happen. Some of our highest ridership routes are in those corridors where we've specifically implemented service to support that type of development. And now we're working on a short-range transit plan that's going to look at, you know, are there other areas where we could implement this type of service or where we could continue to encourage this? And where else are our shortfalls? Because one of the other challenges that we have is while folks want to ride the service in this corridor, even with our investments in service, we have challenges of, you know, people standing at a bus stop and full buses going by and or areas where there is some density and development where we've not been able to extend service as a result of funding or other challenges as well, too. So, again, I think our community sees it as part of our multimodal transportation system. And for many, it's an option in addition to whether it's driving, biking, walking, or doing other things. It's just an option that folks have that's available to them.
Harvey Miller?
Yeah, I think he raises a good point, is that no one's talking about banning cars here. That's not what we want to do, and we want to create a sustainable transportation system. Cars are useful. What we'd like to do is to get most people not to use cars for most trips in as many neighborhoods as possible. So we'd like to see a sustainable transportation system where people rely upon walking and biking for short trips and public transit for longer trips and use cars for niche purposes, like people with special mobility needs. Perhaps you're going to a big box retailer to buy a bunch of things or taking the kids to soccer practice with all their gear. That's when automobiles make sense. They also make sense for first mile, last mile accessibility to public transit. But the trouble is that we have binge automobility in our society. We use automobiles for everything, and they should be used for special purposes, and we should rely upon other modes of transportation in a more balanced way.
Sufjan in Old Town East, I hope I pronounced your name properly. Welcome to the show.
Hi, welcome.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that one of the solutions would be to, especially long-term, with the projected growth in Columbus, to build some sort of train system. And I think that would pull people out of the vehicles and, you know, and make them more reliant on public transportation.
Do you think that would be just sort of because it's cooler to ride a train? Is that why you're saying that more people would be amenable to that?
It would be more. It would be more hip, especially with the millennials, because I am a millennial, but also with the dependability. Because I think, like, a lot of people, they'll catch Uber or they'll drive because they want to get to their destination quicker.
Huh.
So with the train system in conjunction with the bus system, I think it'll be more ideal for people to get to where they need to go in a timely fashion.
Harvey Miller, we've talked on and off over the years about high-speed rail, about commuter rail. Nothing seems to stick.
Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of rail because it's the most efficient way to move people, especially from an energy efficiency point of view. But it's expensive, and it takes a long time to build, at least in this country.
Mm-hmm.
We're not China, and we can't just build things at will. I'm more of a fan in the thinking more in the short to medium term for bus rapid transit and dedicated bus lanes, because we could create a lot of efficient throughput, you know, using dedicated bus lanes. We could use articulated buses, for example. We could have bus riders glide past traffic, and it also would be a more pleasant experience. You wouldn't be jerking back and forth in and out of traffic. It'd be much more like a rail experience. I think the reason why people really don't like buses in the United States is because we've had several generations that have grown up in cities where buses were considered to be transportation for the poor only. But as Enrique Penalosa said, a great city is one where even the rich ride public transportation. So part of it is that we really need to improve the quality of services. And I think once people discover what good quality public services or public transit is, they would be more ready to ride it.
Yeah. Brian Litchfield, you brought up that it wasn't just the freebie. It was now you have to make the service match the demand you're trying to create.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think some of the points earlier about looking at things like bus rapid transit make sense, especially for kind of smaller to medium-sized communities where maybe other transit options are not possible. We're looking at one of our main corridors today, turning it into a bus rapid transit corridor, and have another corridor that's in line for the future. So I think that's certainly something that places can look at. And along with the implementing the fare free, I think a big part of it also says for communities to take a look at their sustainability goals, their social and racial equity goals, and say, how else can we achieve these? And fare free transit may be one of those. I always tell folks, I hop on buses on a regular occurrence or a regular basis around here, and whether you have lint in your pocket or $500, you can ride the bus and go wherever you want in the community. And many times when I ride, there's students with their heads and either buried in their iPhone or with their earbuds in, mm-hmm. standing or sitting next to folks with medical jackets on, or folks that are just headed to the grocery store, or maybe kids on their way to school. So it doesn't matter who you are or where you're getting on at, the service is available. So it can help meet many other goals as in addition to helping move people throughout your community.
I want to kind of leave it with you, Harvey Miller. How do you change a culture when it comes to attitudes about transportation?
We talk about this all the time, both, in the scientific literature and also this among local transportation people. And I'm of the opinion that if we provide good service, that people will discover it and use it. It's kind of a chicken or egg thing. How do you change the mindset so people ride public transit? But I think we're not used to high quality public transit in this country. And I think if we were and people discovered how useful and easy it could be to use, and how you can multitask while on a bus, I think that would really change people's mindset. But it takes leadership, because what we're facing is that when it comes to dedicated bus lanes and bus rapid transit and so forth, we have to take some of our street space away from cars, and that's a big political battle. Drivers don't want to hear that. But if we could just allocate more space to buses, we would have a much, more reliable, frequent, faster, less delayed service that people would find enjoyable and useful.
Harvey Miller, OSU geography professor, studies sustainable transportation. Thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And Brian Litchfield from Chapel Hill, North Carolina, where he is the transit director. Thanks for your time today. I really appreciate it.
I enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
And thanks to everybody else for listening. This has been All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.